Turk's exciting, eventful Monday show as usual.
Too much news.
Yes, indeed. Cenk Uygur, John Iadarola with you guys. We have incredible constitutional drama at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We have drama at the Washington Post as Roy Moore supporters attempt to infiltrate the Washington Post. That is going to be a hilarious story. And then we've got Donald Trump's obsession with Time Magazine, which then turns into the Koch brothers kind of halfway buying Time Magazine, which is amazing. And I've got a lot of thoughts on that. So it's chock full of news, as every Monday in the Trump administration certainly is.
Yeah.
So I would say, without further ado, let's get started.
Oh, wow. Okay, probably not a bad call because we do have a lot to get to today.
Yeah.
As of this week, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau now has a new head, but I can't really tell you who it is. It depends on who you talk to. It's a complicated situation. Director Richard Cordray, who was appointed by President Obama as the first person to run the agency, resigned effective last Friday. And then some complicated shenanigans began. President Donald Trump said that Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney will be in charge in the interim until a formal director is appointed. But before leaving, Cordray, who just resigned, designated Deputy Director Leandra English to fill his spot until a permanent replacement is nominated and confirmed. And as of this morning, at least, both were saying they were functioning as the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Now, what's interesting is a senator who's sort of an expert on this organization said that there really shouldn't be any complicated ideas of who's in charge of it. If we could bring this up, you're going to see a tweet here. The Dodd-Frank Act is clear. If there's a CFPB director vacancy, the deputy director becomes acting director. And we highlighted that section right there that says they serve as acting director in the absence or unavailability of the director. That director has been absent since Friday, and so Senator Warren there has a very good point. But it's weird, the timeline. If you bring up this next graphic, you're going to see that they're having sort of a Game of Thrones style back and forth, where Mulvaney comes in, says he's hard at work, has a photo of him with donuts, Dunkin' Donuts, which is a good choice. I like those.
Agreed.
Leandra English is still signing emails as the acting director. Then several hours later, Mulvaney tells them to not listen to her. And then there's a lawsuit to figure out who is actually in charge of this. And for reasons we're going to get into, based on both an interview with Senator Warren, but also the results of an investigation by TYT Investigates, it really matters which of these two is in charge of that organization.
I believe the Lannisters are going to come out on top.
You think so?
Yeah, because they always pay their debts, and this is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
They always reduce your debts.
If only it were so. Okay. So first of all, this is amazing. Second of all, the answer I think is relatively clear, and then how it gets applied is totally unclear. So the law that the Trump administration is using to justify Mulvaney as the acting director says that the president gets to fill vacancies at the executive branch. So far, that makes sense from the Trump point of view, unless there is a law saying how that vacancy would normally be filled. Now, in the case of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, there is a very clear law, Dodd-Frank law, that says if the acting director, if the director steps down, the
deputy director
will become the acting director.
So it's so simple that we just fit it in that little tweet.
That's right. So the law that Trump is relying on is not relevant, because that law says if there is no law saying who will be the director, then you can appoint it. But in this case, there is a law saying who will be the director. It's a Dodd-Frank legislation, which clearly says the deputy director will be the acting director. So I think a court could take about 30 seconds to decide this. Yeah. Now, the application, though, is wildly complicated, because if you're sitting in the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau today as the two different kings have shown up, right? One's a Lannister and one is Dornish, or whatever, right? A Stark. Anyway, well, then you go to your own legal counsel, and the legal counsel has to decide who's actually the acting director. Yeah. The problem is that the legal counsel is taking their memo from the Justice Department. And the guy who wrote the memo at the Justice Department saying that Mulvaney should be in charge is a guy who was just working for a payday lender that was assessed a fine by the Consumer Financial Protection
Bureau. We've got a little bit more on that.
Right, so the Trump swamp has decided that the guy who was just getting paid by the people that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was investigating should decide that it should be Mulvaney who would like to literally destroy the department altogether. He co-sponsored legislation to eliminate the department, to destroy it completely.
It sounds like what you're saying is that the king has just died and now Cersei and the Starks want power. Who will the City Watch go with? Probably the payday lender that pays them, which I guess would be Littlefinger in this case.
Yes, I was going to say Littlefinger in the beginning.
Yeah, there you go. And so why is it so important to Trump and to payday lenders that they get Mulvaney instead of this other person? Well, there's good reasons for that. Now we've got some information coming out of an article released today by TYT Investigates, which is on the website. You can see it and it'll be linked in the description. Over the course of Mulvaney's four congressional runs from 2009 through 2016, Bank of America, the American Bankers Association, and the Credit Union Association gave those sums of money to Mulvaney. And so that's worrying, since this is an organization that's supposed to provide a check on the rampant power of banks. You know, the sort of crash that they instituted that was the cause of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau being developed in the first place. But more specifically here, in 2016, Grupo Salinas, which owns the largest payday loan chain in the country, Advance America, contributed $5,000 to Mulvaney's campaign. Last month, the CFPB introduced new strict regulations on payday loan practices, prompting Advance America's spokesman to call on Trump to intercede, which apparently he is going to do. In fact, as you pointed out, even directly with having a person who worked for them being the one who's sort of making the call on who gets to lead this group until a new permanent director is put into place.
So let's pause there to see how swampy that is. So reviewing, this payday lender gets a notice from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We are going to protect consumers from you. They are huge political donors. They turn to all the people that they have donated to, including the Trump administration and Mick Mulvaney, and they say, intercede on our behalf. Do not let them protect consumers from us.
Yeah.
And the Trump administration goes, well, no problem. I'll put the guy who you gave money to, Mulvaney, as the head of the group, and he wants to destroy the group, so he will destroy all regulations that might protect consumers from you, okay? So I'll put Mulvaney in charge, and then I'll put the guy who's making the decision as to who the acting director is as someone who just worked for you.
Yeah.
So you're paid off enough people inside the government that don't worry, you will get to rob consumers just like you were planning to before this meddlesome group within the government meant to protect the citizens actually protects those citizens. Yeah. This is Swamp 101.
Yeah, and you had Trump over the weekend tweeting about how badly they needed reform at this organization, saying that it wasn't working right for banks. Every other part of the government works for the banks. This is the one part that's supposed to work for us. And in general terms, of course, you know, it's done great things over the past 6 or so years in helping to relieve people of unnecessary and contested debts, recover money for organizations and banks that broke the law in various ways, lots of stuff like that. But specifically here, we're not just talking about banks, which love to take advantage of the people with the least power in this country. We're talking about payday lenders, which are the people that even banks don't want to be in the room with, that are specifically designed to steal every last cent from people who do not have a cent to have stolen from them. And that's the group that they are fighting. After just a few extra regulations, a few protections for people like you, they're going to throw the Constitution in the trash so that they can get their way. Elizabeth Warren, by the way, was interviewed about some of this, said that Dodd-Frank is quite specific. It provides its own succession planning. There is no vacancy for President Trump to fill. And then had some thoughts on the two dueling heads of the organization, saying Leandra English has been at CFPB from the beginning, and keeping her would give the American people a chance to look at this agency one more time and see how hard it fights on behalf of consumers. So that's English. Well, what about Mulvaney? She said the agency will be headed by someone who fundamentally doesn't believe in its mission. This would change every calculation that every giant bank makes in the executive suite when deciding just how close to breaking the law they want to come. If the cop is pulled off the beat, then the profits from cheating people look far more attractive to the banking executives. And I love that TYT Investigates is looking into the donors and has that. I mean, that definitely cause for concern, a financial conflict of interest in the case of Mick Mulvaney. But as you alluded to earlier, in this particular case, I'm not sure that we necessarily need it quite as much, because this is a guy who has called this organization a sad, sick joke. then today said that that's not fair, he was misquoted. What he actually said is, it's a joke in a sick, sad kind of way, which I'm not sure is actually better. And as you said, in 2015, co-sponsored legislation to literally eliminate it entirely and said, quote, I don't like the fact that CFPB exists.
I think that one's pretty clear, right?
It's pretty clear.
It's putting the bank robber in charge of the bank. And so now it's funny because they've got $12 billion in reasons as to why to do it. And this is just what's happened in the past, let alone the future. It has so far, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has handled more than 1.2 million consumer complaints. So that's you guys saying, hey, I think my bank might have ripped me off. Now, what do they do next? They don't just take your word for it and then just throw money at you. No, they do an investigation, and a lot of those complaints sometimes are not merited, sometimes they're too hard to adjudicate, and etc. But some of them are legitimate. In fact, a lot of them are legitimate. And once they've gone through that, they then have to deal with the army of lawyers that the banks throw at them. And after all of that is through, they returned $12 billion to American citizens that the banks had clearly, indisputably, even their lawyers had said, oh, okay, let's pay this one back. Okay, $12 billion that they had taken from you and put into banking executives' pockets. Now, the people in New York and Washington and the elites, they wonder why regular Americans don't like bankers. They're always like, so surprised, why? In the cocktail circuit, I've got a lot of great banking friends. And the reality is, of course you need banks. And of course there are plenty of great people who work in financial institutions. But yes, there are also people who ripped off Americans to the tune of at least $12 billion, which this agency got back for the American people. So the banks hate this agency because they want to be able to rip you off. Yeah. Not every bank, not every executive, not remotely. But a lot of them.
And also, and it's really important to point out, and you sort of did already, that they recovered the $12 billion. But think about what Elizabeth Warren said about the effect on behavior. $12 billion is what they still stole, and the organization was able to get back. But what about the fact that that organization existing, its investigations existing, changing bank behavior so that they don't steal tons of other money? It might be far, far more than the $12 billion.
That's right. And Trump ran against the global financial elites. He mentioned them in one ad after another. Now, you want to talk about a sick, sad joke? That's the, unfortunately, not only the Trump campaign, but I got to be honest with you, the joke is on the Trump voters. So he told you he was going to drain the swamp and he was against the financial elites. Now he turns around and in his tweet he said, quote, financial institutions have been devastated. The poor financial institutions that he ran his whole campaign against. Yeah. He's now heartbroken over how the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has actually regulated them and been effective cops, somewhat effective cops against them. He says the poor banks, the poor banks. Let me bring in Mick Mulvaney, who I know wants to destroy this on behalf of his banker donors, to go ahead and destroy it. And right now, technically, I can't make him the acting director. Who cares? What are we, in a democracy? I don't give a damn about the law. I'm going to get another corrupt guy in the Department of Justice to do an opinion saying, sure we can. Now look, it's going to go to the courts and you're going to see we're going to be proven right. Because the law is actually exceedingly clear.
Yeah.
Even if it went in front of Republican judges, I would be shocked if they weren't like, come on, man. It says right there. Unless there is a law saying how the director is picked, and there is a law saying how the director is picked, you don't have any authority here. But by the time that they've done that, Mulvaney will have, you know, caused chaos at the agency, yep, completely debilitated it, and let his banker friends run wild. And not the good bankers, but the ones that intend to do harm and that don't want any cops on the street. Yeah. So that's who Trump is, that's who Mulvaney is. And right now, they're letting the bad bankers walk into the back of the bank with huge duffel bags going, oh, payday, maybe. Time for us to go back to work robbing American taxpayers. And that's what they're going to do.
We have a little bit more news on Elizabeth Warren, but why don't we take our first break and we'll come back with that.
Yeah, just if you're a Trump voter, look, it's okay, guys. Everybody makes mistakes. I've made 1,000 mistakes in my life. Just admit it and move on with your life. He's going to destroy the internet and he's going to let the banks rob you. He suckered you, it happens. I've gotten suckered in the past, okay? Yeah. If you don't want to admit it, well, you're blind and or painfully stupid.
Being suckered sucks and it's embarrassing, but continuing to go along with it once you realize you're wrong initially, that's worse.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the three card Monty guy, why did I fall for that? That was so stupid. I know it's a
double
trick.
Down.
Oh, you know what? Hey, here, let me give you another $100.
Yeah.
Right? No, walk away, stop digging. But okay, if you want to let the bankers take more money from you, even though you voted for Trump to stop the bankers, I can't stop you from being an idiot. All right, we'll come right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and John with you guys. Read some tweets here. Lauren Quincy writes in, I got out of work early, can finally watch you guys live. Hashtag winning. Indeed, yes. Lauren, I hope and believe that you are winning. Eldo Wande Chingon writes in the hands of the GOP, isn't the CFPB just an exercise in irony? That is certainly true, to say the least.
It's one of the clearest examples of what we saw when he was doing his appointments to the cabinet, just choosing people who are specifically targeted to destroy it.
So DeVos had talked about shutting down the Department of Education. She becomes the head of education. But these are specific quotes. Rick Perry said he would eliminate Department of Energy. He's appointed Department of Energy. Those are not accidents. They're not coincidences. They were not picked despite those quotes. They were picked because of those quotes. Same with Mulvaney. He's like, this is getting in the way of our banker donors. It's a seek and destroy mission. If you think the Republicans are against big bankers, you're a fucking moron. You don't know anything about politics. Go ahead, keep voting for them, and they'll laugh at you behind your back at the cocktail circuit as they're clicking martini glasses. Go, moron Republican voters helping to let us rob them blind. Okay.
Which is a really bad toast when you get right down to it.
Yeah, well, they think it's hilarious. Anyway, Eric C. Olson says, nice haircut, Cenk. You as well, John.
So thank you.
Well, thank you.
I don't really like mine, but thank you.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, really fast. This is just 7 seconds of old school. It seems frustrating. I don't cut hair. It's probably harder than I think it is. But if you show them a picture of yourself with the haircut you want, shouldn't you get it?
Yeah, well, it depends on where you go.
I understand how that works out.
Yeah.
It's like I look at this picture, I look at me in the mirror, and I'm like, not even close. Anyway.
Yeah, I, on the other hand, go, what do I know? Make it short, but not too short. I'm in your hands. Okay. All right. Okay. Actually, you reminded me.
It's fine. I'm kidding.
Guys, I think this is the last day of 10 days of Black Friday. I believe it's now like 13 days of Black Friday. Anyway, it's a thing that's invented called Cyber Monday. So we're doing a sale. And it's ridiculous because it's now 35% off of everything. But you got to use the code treat yourself. Treat yourself, okay? Because we are very hip and cool. That's at shopTYT.com. Go nuts as you have been looting the place over this Black Friday sale.
I forget if it was Jer or Ben, but at the production meeting, they cited a Conan O'Brien tweet that said Donald Trump called Black Friday the most ungrateful of Fridays.
Okay.
Let's get back to the news. Okay. Today, someone made the horrible decision of allowing Donald Trump to speak at an event honoring Native American code talkers who served during World War II. And because of that, no one was really that shocked when this happened.
I just want to thank you because you're very, very special people. You were here long before any of us were here. Although we have a representative in Congress who they say was here a long time ago. They call her Pocahontas. But you know what? I like you.
Oh my God.
I thought it was a joke when someone tweeted about it at first. So those guys served in World War II.
They broke the Nazi code so that America could win. And while honoring them, he makes jokes about Native Americans. There is no bottom to that barrel.
I would say before you get to the Pocahontas stuff, it's inane and childish what his compliments that you've been around long before we were. Like to say that it was brave that you served, say that it was amazing that you guys were able to put to use languages that they could not decipher, and that gave us the edge. Talk about those things, not just you've been around long before. That's just calling them old. And then to unnecessarily bring, it's his stream of consciousness thing. He's talking about something, Elizabeth Warren pops into his head, so he has to say it. It has nothing to do with anything, but he has to bring it up again.
He said Pocahontas while honoring Native Americans who served during World War II.
He's been told many times by organizations representing Native Americans, please, including the specific tribe that she comes from, or came from, I should say, please stop doing this. But he refuses, and he says other people call Pocahontas. You're the only person who calls her Pocahontas in the world.
The other, so look, the role of Native Americans in World War II, they played a huge role, but there's other people who helped create codes, break codes, yes, etc. on all sides. And in England, there's a famous case of the person who broke the Nazi code.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a lot of people involved, but he was a critical player. And then it turned out later that we found out he was gay, and then he was mercilessly crushed for being gay. Yeah. It's like Trump honoring him and using the F word.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I hear F's like you were also good. Like, what the? How could you say that?
Yeah.
The Tuskegee Airmen or whatever. Oh, okay, you N-words. I guess you were helpful at some point. What the hell? You can't say Pocahontas while honoring these people.
Well, he's exactly the sort of Republican president that will refuse to go to like an NAACP event. Thank God. God knows what he would say that if he actually showed up. But of course, as many people have pointed out, it might even be worse than the Pocahontas thing, because in that video, behind them is a picture of Andrew Jackson, who he put up in the Oval Office, thanks to the suggestions of notorious racist Steve Bannon. Andrew Jackson, of course, signed the Indian Removal Act that led to the Trail of Tears. About 15,000 Native Americans are estimated to have died during that. And then he, of course, led military genocidal acts against Native Americans up and down the coast and all that. But this isn't actually the only like thing that he's done with the Pocahontas and all of that. I did a little bit of research, and back in 1993, Donald Trump was on Don Imus's show and said, I think I might have more Indian blood than a lot of these so-called Indians that are trying to open up reservations. During a congressional hearing on Indian gaming, he testified and said that the Mashantucket Pequots of Connecticut, quote, didn't look like Indians to him, so they should not have had a casino. He also took out in New York when an Indian tribe was trying to have a casino. He paid $1 million secretly in ads in newspapers, radios, and TV, calling the Mohawk Indians drug users and drug dealers, and said that if they got their casino, it would bring crime and broken families and, quote, in the case of the Mohawks, violence, because they're violent Native Americans, apparently. They never reported that spending, him and Roger Stone. And so because of that, the State Lobbying Commission imposed their largest ever civil fine against him for that.
And look, so let's be-
hates them.
Let's just review all the things wrong with Donald Trump, just in this tiny little story. One, remember, he ran casinos. It's not like he thought casinos were a problem that created crime by definition.
Yeah.
So no, he was just trying to kill off his competition. So because of greed, he will say endlessly racist things that he doesn't care about at all. Sensitivities to Native Americans, honoring Native Americans. Donald Trump doing that. You might as well have Andrew Jackson do it himself.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember when John Ashcroft covered a statue in the Justice Department because he might have seen her nip, right? Like, but you're going to do an honoring of Native Americans right under Andrew Jackson's picture. Okay, fine. So greed. Second of all, at least not be stupid enough to say it on camera while you're honoring them. Oh, like Pocahontas. Thereby reminding everybody of all the racist things you've said about Native Americans in the past, yeah, right? So greedy and stupid. And then finally, what's the uniting theme? Racism through and through. Yeah. Anytime he sees someone that is not white, he's like, oh, okay, the Central Park Five. It turns out they were innocent. I don't care. They're black. They should be executed or stay in jail forever. Anyway, I don't care. Puerto Rico, what is, oh, they're lazy. They're not even helping themselves. Native Americans, Pocahontas, violent, etc. He goes to racist stereotypes immediately in every single case.
Yeah.
And if you're still defending him, that's okay. Yeah. But if you watch this and you know this and you could look it up, you don't have to trust us. You could look it up in the Central Park Five in every case that I referred to. If you still like him, you know what that means? You're a racist. Go ahead, flip out and cry and be a snowflake. But you are. You're a deep-seated bigot and racist who likes Donald Trump, not despite the fact that he's a racist, but because of the fact that he's a racist.
By the way, it also involves, if you go back to some of the research I was talking about, how cheap he is. Because while he was running those ads to stop one Native American tribe from being granted the license to have I believe this is in northern New York, a casino. He was also sponsoring legal help for a different Native American tribe that said that if he pays for the legal research to establish their lineage and to get the sort of certifications they need to have an Indian gaming casino license, that they would then give him a management fee afterwards. Now, he did that. He got the legal research done. They were granted the legal status. He didn't end up getting the casino in part because one of the people on the regulatory commission that had to vote on it had seen his previous comments about Native Americans, and so they didn't like him. But after that, after he didn't get it, the legal team that did the research so that they could get the certification came to him and said, "So you still haven't paid us the $600,000 you owe us, Trump." And he said, "I'm so high profile, you should do it for free." And that was the only reason he was going to get the management fee, was because of that legal research. He didn't pay for it. Well, you know, in the end, they did end up getting the money. I don't know if it was the $600,000, but he refused initially to pay it.
After all this, to be fair, to Trump supporters, maybe Trump himself, you know, he was disrespecting
military vets, part of the greatest generation, in front of everyone, just completely disrespecting him. Good thing all the people that are mad about Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling, they're also mad about this disrespect of the military, because they actually care about the military. It crosses all lines, you know? They're outraged. They put Colin Kaepernick in one picture, then they put Donald Trump in another picture. They're like, they're both disrespecting our military that we love.
They
so
must.
JR, man, this just came in. I hope you're not crestfallen. But it turns out they're not doing that.
It turns out they don't mind at all what he said.
I saw like memes and gifs.
Yeah.
Oh, you think so?
Also, by the way, so if we lived, you know, like maybe at some point in our history we did where like facts matter and all that, then what I'm about to say would matter. I acknowledge ahead of time it ain't gonna change any minds. But this whole thing about Pocahontas and her was based off of lies that Scott Brown told about her and her, like all the stuff they said about her claiming to be Native American wasn't true. She was added to some lists. There is no evidence that she proactively ever applied as a Native American to get a job. And in fact, they have many of her applications that show that she self-identified as white. So the whole thing, on top of everything else, is based on a goddamn fake news.
Yeah, and look, the uniting theme of everything about Trump's life is you're the world's biggest sucker if you ever trust Donald J. Trump. The guys who, you know, the $600,000, you trusted him, you're an idiot. All the people who ever lent him money, with the exception of Vladimir Putin. Okay, totally screwed. By the way, Putin's also screwed. He wanted the sanctions lifted, and Trump hasn't been able to lift them.
Well, he hasn't put into effect the new ones that was voted on bipartisanly.
Yeah, and
I got that.
Six different bankruptcies. If you voted for him, thinking you're voting against the global financial elites, and now he turns around and says the global financial elites are deserve more help than ever from the government. Suckers.
Yeah. If you're a woman who ended up marrying him, it turns out that the small hands actually were a bad sign of things to come. Everybody gets screwed.
Well, but not that much, apparently. Finally, to continue on a dirty theme. Look, those veterans there, they're receiving an award. It's not the time or the place. And so I'm not begrudging them at all. But it would have been awesome if one of them, after hearing, not before, after hearing the Pocahontas comment, there's a mic right there, like shake his hand and go, "Oh, by the way, fuck you and that guy up there on that picture. So thank you very much. I helped save this country. I hate to see it being turned off over to the fascists like you, who I fought against." Yeah. That would have been awesome.
That would have been great. They've done enough, but that would have been great.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to something slightly different also in the news this week. This week, Senate Republicans are planning to hold a vote on their tax reform bill. Now, it's been a little bit since we had a show, so why don't we check in and see what their chances are of getting that passed. There's a new CBO report, and in addition, there's been a few more nonpartisan outside of the CBO analyses of the likely effect of the tax bill. And it's just getting worse and worse. Turns out, it will ultimately raise taxes by 2027 on more than half the country. This tax cut bill will raise taxes on half of you, at the very least watching this video, possibly more. Specifically, by 2019, Americans earning less than $30,000 a year would be worse off after this bill than if you didn't have it at all. Remember, this is a tax cut bill. By 2021, if you're under 40,000, you'd be net losers. And by 2027, it rises all the way to $75,000 a year. So if you make more than that, you might at least break even for a while. The country will probably end up going bankrupt, but you'll be okay for a bit. If, however, you make as much as the vast majority of this country does, you're going to be screwed in just a few years. However, millionaires and those earning $100,000 to $500,000 would be big beneficiaries, according to the CBO's calculations.
So,
I wasn't really doubting that from the beginning, though.
This is amazing. This is the most literal wealth redistribution I have ever seen in my lifetime of covering politics.
Yeah.
But they are redistributing the wealth from the poor and the middle class to the top. It's amazing. It's the most brazen thing I've ever seen. And that's why, by the way, the stock market is booming, among the reasons why, and why a lot of the corporate CEOs, backers, etc., have not backed away from Trump. It doesn't matter if he thought there was some good people on the neo-Nazi side. It doesn't matter all the terrible things he's done. His obvious over-the-top incompetence, nothing matters. They're like, oh yes, for all the middle class, give me their money. Give me their money. I want to redistribute wealth. So you want to talk about class warfare? This is class warfare. So right from the beginning, analysts said that a third of the middle class would immediately get tax increases. And by the way, I should apologize. They always called it tax reform. And I said, look, call it what it is. It isn't tax reform, it's tax cuts. It's tax cuts for the rich. And by the way, 80% of the cuts goes to the top 1%. 80% of the cuts to the top 1%. Okay. But it turns out I was wrong. It isn't just tax cuts. There's also tax increases. So it could fairly be called tax reform.
Or just wealth redistribution.
So now the tax, this is the way that it works. Mainly, it's corporations that are getting a tax cut from 35 to 20%. Or if you run a business that's a pass-through business like Donald Trump does, you're getting a massive tax cut.
Yeah.
If you are already a multimillionaire or a billionaire, you're getting a gigantic tax cut in the estate taxes, etc. In order to pay for that, even before you get into deep cuts they're going to have to make later into Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. Well, what are you going to do? Well, number one, you're going to run up a giant deficit. So it is at a minimum $1.5 trillion they're going to add to the deficit.
Plus debt servicing and
all that. So if you're, and the Republicans admit that. So from now on, if you're a Republican and you like this plan, you are never ever allowed to say that you're for balanced budgets, because you're not. You don't like balanced budgets as long as you're the one getting the wealth redistribution. You want to talk about Obama phones? this is Trump yachts to the rich and to the corporations.
The yachts probably have phones, to be fair.
Yeah. So they admit they're adding $1.5 trillion to the deficit, and they don't care. They never cared about the deficit. Never. It was always to serve their rich donors. Now, secondarily, once you get past 10 years, they say, a third of the middle class getting tax increases to pay for the tax cuts for the rich? Not nearly enough. After the 10 years, everyone, almost everyone under $75,000, as John just explained to you, everyone under $75,000, your taxes go up, your income and your services go down. So you have to bear the burden of all the corporate tax cuts and the tax cuts to the billionaires. It's insane. This is the greatest robbery in American history.
Yeah.
And so if you want to, if you're one of those folks, whether you, by the way, if you're on the right or the left and you thought the system was rigged, well, this is exactly how it's rigged. They have private financing of elections, and then the politicians work for the people who finance their election, which are private interests. Did you finance their elections? No. So they don't work for you. They work for the people who sign their checks. So they go, okay, thank you very much for all those donations. Now here's the goodies that you want, trillions of dollars. Where are we going to get it from? We're going to get it from the idiots who think we have a democracy. And then we'll turn around and go, what, Rick, how, what do you mean? What do you mean? Those people saying that the politicians might work for their donors? Well, we don't allow them on TV. We never talk about it on TV because some of the money goes to TV. So this is how it's rigged, and this is how they will rob you blind. This is why we need a revolution, a political revolution, because as long as they keep working for their donors, they're going to keep on robbing you. This is just the most spectacular case of it.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about this week, what are their chances of actually passing it? because we saw earlier this year, you know, we were really worried about them repealing healthcare, and obviously there's a big component of that in this as well. And even though the hip thing to do is attack people who are resisting Trump for some reason, thankfully that resistance did actually work, and they failed in their attempts to take away your healthcare at that point. And so this week is go time for the second round of that, to try to get enough Republican votes to flip against the tax bill to make sure that it doesn't pass. A couple of weeks ago, we told you that Ron Johnson said that he would not be voting for it, or not be voting yes, I should say, in its current incarnation. Today, we got the second. Senator Steve Daines, a Republican of Montana, came out and said that he would not vote in favor of it because it was too slanted towards helping corporations. And that Montana Republican did not say that because he has long felt that we're too good to corporations. He's worried about the electoral repercussions if he votes for it. Two, however, is not enough, which means that you need to do whatever you can to put pressure on the other people who have are considered sort of in the middle on the bill. We're not sure if they're voting yes or no. Some of those people, this is not exhaustive, but would include Senators Collins, Corker, McCain, Murkowski, Flake, and Lankford, who have spoken at least at times critically of the bill. Now, if one or two more of those turn against it, then we've got something, at least until they modify the bill.
Look, this is classic Overton window stuff. So Trump comes in with a proposal to take every single dollar you have and give it to the richest person in America. Then the Corkers of the world go, oh, come on, no, that's too much. You know what, why don't we leave you with a couple of bucks and then take 80% of your money and give it to the rich? And then the people on TV go, bravo, Corker, bravo, what a moderate you are. And 80% robbery all of a sudden becomes the moderate centrist position. So you have that robbery to look forward to.
Yeah, assuming that they come back to it. I mean, right now he needs to vote against this. They could come back to repealing Obamacare at any time, but at least for the last 6 months or so, they haven't. And so, look, as much as like John McCain voting against it doesn't absolve him of all the other terrible things he did, at least he voted against it. And at least for those 6 months, people still have their health insurance.
Here's my prediction ahead of time, as usual. You will see Morning Joe wildly applauding so-called centrist Republicans and some Democrats as they turn around and vote for some version of this bill that is not quite as draconian as this, but still takes money from the middle class and gives it to corporations and the rich.
Oh, I think 100%. And we knew that long before Trump won the election. That was one of the main reasons we needed to stop him from winning, because they would get something like this. However, you misspoke there. They won't see that on Morning Joe, because I heard from Donald Trump the ratings are terrible. Nobody watches it.
Until they applaud him again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, why don't we do our, oh, by the way, this is just one other thing. This bill is so goddamn unpopular. New public policy polling poll, 51% of small businesses oppose it as well. Only 34%.
You know why? Because it's not for small businesses.
Because people are learning. Like, they're learning. They've been through cycles of this before. They know that the rhetoric is lies.
Look, to be fair, the pass-through rate could help a lot of small businesses. Could not help the business, but could help the owner, because he would have to pay lower taxes. Now, he doesn't have to reinvest that money back into his business. That's his choice. And then some of them will do that to grow their business, which is logical. Some of them will just keep it. And some of them, if their business success successful enough, will get a yacht, a Trump yacht. Okay? So good on those folks that would benefit, still saying no, this is terrible for the country and the economy overall. But for a lot of small businesses, this bill doesn't help you at all. You know why? It's not structured for small business. It's structured for gigantic businesses.
Yeah.
It cuts the corporate tax rate of multinational corporations to the bone. And then they'll cheat, and they'll still offshore the money. So they'll go from, you know, it used to be, it's 35% now, but their effective tax rate is around 22% because of all the loopholes. Now the new rate will be 20%. And because of the loopholes, it'll be down to like 9% that they're paying.
Or -3.
Yeah, and by the way, when the big corporations don't pay it, a lot of times what they do is they move the tax burden onto smaller corporations. And it's a twofer for them. Not only do they shift the burden onto a competitor, but they help to crush the little guy in the meanwhile, because they don't want to compete with the little guy. So that's why a lot of small business owners going, fuck you, you're not in it for me, you're in it for you, and I'm savvy enough to understand that.
Yeah, but at least most of you watching this will eventually benefit from the estate tax being removed. You got that to look forward to. It takes a while, you gotta wait a few decades, but eventually you'll be able to pass on your inheritance to the children.
Yeah, all right, when we
I
come back. When we come back, conservatives try to trick the Washington Post and the results are hilarious. You'll love that story when we come back. All right, back on the Young Turks. I'll read some tweets for you guys. Cenk and John with you guys right now. Matt Strackbine writes in, one thing's for sure, white supremacists are applauding Trump's racial slur toward Native Americans today, and they're probably the only ones. That is Trump's base biggest racist and Nazis. LL Bishop says the GOP tax bill also cuts on services to the middle class and poor, to children and the elderly, veterans programs, and complete ending of many. I will be paying taxes now to further enrich the top 1%. Yeah, unfortunately, that is what's going to happen. And in the time of record-breaking income inequality, they are going to make it way, way worse. Unreal. And
we showed him last election. Showed him.
Yep. And Crow writes in, I usually don't comment on fashion, but J.R. Jackson.
That's Jackson. His fashion channel, actually.
That's right.
J.R. Jackson.
J.R. Jackson. There's something there, man.
We're going to do video three.
Yes.
Jackson.
That would work. Jackson fashion.
Action Jackson.
What is the accent?
Action Jackson. Action fashion. Anyway, I usually don't comment on fashion, but J.R. Jackson is fucking fresh, was the comment.
Damn.
Okay.
Hey, I didn't say it. He said it.
Yeah, he didn't say it. Yeah, he secretly tweeted it under a pseudonym.
Yeah. like John Miller writes in, along with John Barron. All right, anyway, members of the day are Richard Mooney and Rita Bartholomew. So, Rita and Richard, thank you. We really appreciate it. TYTnetwork.com/join to support the show and independent media and get the whole program commercial free. Yeah. All right, what's next, John?
We've got some more updates for you. Because this is 2017, multiple women coming forward to accuse Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore of molesting them when they were children isn't enough to disqualify him in the eyes of a lot of voters, unfortunately, in Alabama, but also in the eyes of some right-wing media outlets and the president. So we're going to start with Breitbart, who has been steadfast defenders of Roy Moore since the first accusation. They held firm as more and more women came forward, as we found out that he was banned from a mall, as we found out last week that he was they had a cop watching him when he was near the cheerleaders at a game. He was hanging out in high schools. Through all of that, they've defended him. And at times, their defense has been a little bit ridiculous, as it'll be in this video where you're going to see Breitbart editor Joel Pollack with a new defense of Roy Moore.
She was very young to have somebody who's that age come on her, let alone if it was an unwanted touching known as an assault.
You know, in 1973, Ringo Starr hit number one on the Billboard charts with the song You're 16, You're Beautiful in Your Mind, and it was a remake of an earlier song. He was 30-something at the time singing about a 16-year-old. You want to take away Ringo Starr's...
You can't be serious.
I mean...
You can't be serious.
You can't be serious. You're talking about relationships that were legal.
You think that Ringo Starr's song is supposed to be a nod towards allowing 30-year-old men to prey on teenagers? You don't believe that, Joel. You're a parent. You don't believe that.
You're also a parent, and you know that when you raise sons, the risk that our sons face today is that they're going to be exposed to accusations that may or may not be true. And that's a new thing.
What do you think? Ringo Starr defense? Is that the new thing?
Well, look, to be fair to the conservatives, they do projection. That's and whatever they're thinking, they assume you're thinking. So they don't know what's in Ringo Starr's head. And my guess is that it was maybe, I don't know if it was a reference to a 16-year-old talking about another 16-year-old. I don't think it was, Ringo Starr didn't even write that song.
An earlier song.
Right. I don't think it was Ringo Starr being like, I really would like to have sex with a 16-year-old. I don't think that's where he was
going. Regardless, I think this is going to hurt Ringo Starr in the polls.
That's an excellent point. But the reason I bring all that up is because they do have a singer who did sing about having sex with underage girls, and that's Ted Nugent. And he's a conservative star. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Mike Huckabee sang the song with him once. They had a little guitar, you know, combo that they did about how they wanted to go over and have sex with the underage daughter of a neighbor. Okay, and so they think, well, doesn't, I mean, our stars love to sing about having sex with underage girls.
Yeah.
So I assume so does Ringo Starr and other liberals or something.
Yeah.
Whatever Ringo's politics are.
Yeah.
So I am with you. There's a good reason why Roy Moore and Ringo Starr are neck and neck in Alabama in this race.
Exactly.
But
Or maybe Ringo's not in the race. And by the way, neither is Ted Nugent. And it's Roy Moore versus Doug Jones. And Doug Jones has not sung any songs about 16-year-olds or molested them. Or in the case, in one case, very stark case, tried to rape them as Roy Moore did.
Yeah.
So even if you go with Pollock's ideology of, I mean, 16, not so bad, you know what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. And by the way, I think it is a fair point to say that 16 is the legal age of consent in Alabama. To say that in 7 out of 8 cases, on the issue of age, he did not break the law. Mm-hmm. By itself is a fair point.
Although generally, a lot of the times that 16 is the age of consent in a lot of those states, it is the age of consent, but not for an unlimited age span later. It's for a few years later. And then for people who are much older, it is still 18. I'm not sure specifically in Alabama.
No, in Alabama it isn't.
Okay.
In Alabama, it's just that if you're 16, you could have sex with an 84-year-old. Okay. As long as, by the way, first of all, one of the women is under 16. She was 14 at the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Was she a fan of Ringo Starr?
Okay.
Seems hypocritical at this point.
And I know that Ringo talked about bringing 14-year-old girls into the woods and stripping them naked, as Roy Moore is alleged to have done.
Yeah.
And allegations so credible that even Republican senators have said, I believe her. I think that Roy Moore did do that. And he found a way to separate her from her mom. He's such a predator. I don't think
he always separates them. In all of those stories, he's good at corralling them away from their mothers.
Yeah, and I don't think Ringo Starr or anyone else was accused of, was banned from a mall for being a pervert, looking at underage girls and trying to talk to them and contact them and take them home. Was not banned from football games because he couldn't stop trying to pick up the cheerleaders as a person in his 30s. Yeah. Okay, all right. But the last one is the one I wanted to come back to. One of the 16-year-olds, Pollock says, come on, 16, what's the big deal, right? Okay, he's in his 30s, she's 16. He tried to rape her in the parking lot. According to her description, which again is exceedingly credible, so credible that almost all the Republican leadership believes her. He ripped her clothes off while she was waiting for, she mistook him as trustworthy because he worked as a district attorney. And he put her in a parking lot in a car between a dumpster where there were no lights, ripped her clothes off, fondled her and tried to force her head down onto his crotch. And then when she was screaming, he pushed her out of the car into the cold pavement and drove away. I don't think there's a Ringo Starr song about that. That is so vicious.
Maybe
I don't
Ted
even
Nugent.
Think, no, I was going to say, I don't even think Ted Nugent has a song about that.
I'm not going to listen to find out, but I don't know. Yeah, and look, another a pastor came out, I don't know how many days ago this was, but we talked about the production meeting, and said that, look, in his defense, these 14 and 15 and 16-year-old girls, they dress like they're 21. Which is, I guess, could be true. I don't know. I didn't live back then. And that might deceive the eye. But to be fair, when you're waiting outside of their trigonometry class, that should sort of make it a little bit more clear that they're not 21.
Yeah.
I think. So
I can't wait for Joel Pollack to go back on TV and say, I mean, when you're raping a 16-year-old, is that really rape? Yeah. Okay. So, Joel, what's your defense for that? Yeah. I don't know. You're in the defense business and you think 30-year-olds having sex with 16-year-old girls is no problem. Okay, I hear you, brother. Yeah. No problem. How about the rape part? How about the 14-year-old part? You're still supporting Roy Moore, right? So I don't mind the 16-year-olds and I don't mind the rape and I don't mind the 14-year-old should be the complete sentence. Exactly. Otherwise, you shouldn't be backing him. If you are backing him, apparently you think those are not that big a deal either. Yeah. And I'm positive. There's no songs about that. There's no movies to the best of my knowledge about that.
Maybe a haiku.
By the way, I'm sorry. I'm partly wrong. Wait for it. Tomorrow, they'll be back on CNN going, I mean, there was the movie and the book called Lolita, right? And if there was a movie, what, you're asking Roy Moore not to sleep with 14-year-olds? What kind of an unreasonable request is that?
It's a straightforward thing. No, if you look closely, if you have a chance to go back and watch when Joel Pollack did that spin, there's a pause where when you finally get cornered and you're just spewing nonsense, and they go, you don't really believe that. You have daughter, you have a kid, Joel. And he goes, well, and it's like the spin stopped. And then he's like, okay, where am I going with this? You have to. The idea is to spin it back and go, back on my side, my people that I'm defending are the actual victims. You have to flip it. That's where the spin hole works. So he goes, well, you know, when you have sons, sometimes they're accused of false accusations. It's like he got it going again. Think, if you watch it, Kellyanne Conway does it all the time. There's a pause and like, okay, how do I flip this? That's how I flip it. That's all it is.
If you're actually worried, he's not actually worried. He's a goddamn liar. That's what he's paid to do. But if you're actually worried about innocent men being falsely accused and going down when they didn't do anything. You know what actually hurts the innocent men? The guys who rape women and lie about it and call the women who accuse them liars. That's what actually hurts the credibility of men who are falsely accused. But that's his job, is to push that bullshit after he's... Another person who's still supporting Roy Moore after all this, although with a bit of modulation, is Donald Trump. Now, White House spokeswoman Lindsay Walters told The Hill that, quote, there's nothing on his schedule at this time as far as a Trump campaign stop for Moore. So Moore will not have that opportunity for Donald Trump to further drive down his poll numbers. However, even though it appears he's not campaigning for him, he is talking about him to reporters. He spoke on the White House lawn to reporters about Moore and said that he needs to win. He also tweeted this: the last thing we need in Alabama and the US Senate is a Schumer Pelosi puppet. No puppet, who is weak on crime, weak on the border, bad for our military and our great vets, bad for our Second Amendment, and wants to raise taxes to the sky. Jones would be a disaster. He is weak on crime in a way that perhaps Moore, who literally breaks the law to molest younger women, isn't weak on crime in that way. It's not clear from the tweet. Maybe he ran out of characters.
Yeah.
So he's still pushing for him, of course.
Who's surprised by that? Yeah, Trump's a sexual predator.
Need to put it on the record.
Yeah. Of course, he's pro-sexual predators.
Yeah.
I have a lot more to say.
It's the country we live in.
But we have more stories.
That's true. Why don't we push on? We could talk about that for a long time. So one of the right-wing attacks against the Washington Post and the women who have come out against Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore is that the women are all liars, that the liberal media is going in and trying to convince women to knowingly falsely accuse Roy Moore of sexual assault and sexual harassment. That's why you saw the robocall of Bernie Bernstein, Washington Post reporter offering money for people to accuse him, which of course was not true. And now we find out about another attempt, because the Washington Post had an amazing story today about their run-in with a woman named Jamie Phillips. That is apparently her real name. She went under a pseudonym at first when she approached a Washington Post reporter and said that she had information about a relationship she had had back when she was 15 with Roy Moore and wanted to provide more information. So it's a long process of them going back and forth with her and her stringing the reporter along. She wants to use email and not use the phone. She apparently was scared of actually talking to them. But eventually, the Washington Post reporters on Monday morning saw her walking into the New York offices of Project Veritas, a group that has no interest in Veritas or anything like it. Now, this, of course, is the organization that D-bag who likes to go undercover to try to get recordings or tapings that he can selectively edit to make liberal groups look bad, had put this woman up to trying to lie to the Washington Post about her experiences, about being impregnated by Roy Moore and having an abortion. Now, because they found out that she is apparently involved with Project Veritas and had been lying to them, they said this: we always honor off the record agreements when they're entered into in good faith, referring to the conversations they'd previously had with Jamie Phillips. But this so-called off the record conversation was the essence of a scheme to deceive and embarrass us. The intent by Project Veritas clearly was to publicize the conversation if we fell for the trap. Because of our customary journalistic rigor, we weren't fooled, and we can't honor an off the record agreement that was solicited in maliciously bad faith. The problem that the mistake that she made is that she acted incredibly suspiciously in her talks with the Washington Post, continually asking them if once her story came out, that would destroy Roy Moore's chances of winning the race. Of course, she did that because she thought it would look bad for them on tape. They refused to say anything like that whatsoever. And they also made clear to her that they would be fact-checking her story, which they did. And they found out that there was no evidence she could provide that any of the things she talked about had actually happened. And further, they found references online to a GoFundMe campaign under the same name as Jamie Phillips saying this: I'm moving to New York. I've accepted a job to work in the conservative media movement to combat the lies and deceit of the liberal MSM. I'll be using my skills as a researcher and fact checker to help our movement.
Yeah. Fact checker.
Unfortunately, she found out what actual fact checking is like, and her lies and deceit came back to bite her on the ass. Now, they asked her at one of their meetings in person about this posting and whether she had been involved with some sort of organization which was attempting to put one over on the Washington Post. And she said, no, she had applied to work with the Daily Caller. And they asked her, so that they could fact check it, who did you talk to? She said, Kathy, pausing before adding the last name, Johnson. You'll be shocked to find out that Kathy Johnson doesn't work at the Daily Caller, and there's no reference. They talked to the Daily Caller. They have no information about this woman ever having applied. And interestingly, later that night at 7 p.m., the message on the GoFundMe page was gone, replaced by a new one. Campaign is complete and no longer active.
If you're trying,
suspicious.
If you're trying to say, no, that wasn't my GoFundMe page to do a hatchet job on the media like you guys, once they ask you about it, taking it off in a panic is probably not the right way to go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but this story is wonderful for,
it's amazing,
for the exact opposite reason that they intended. They wanted to show, oh, you see how biased the media is, and they don't do their job, and all they do is lie. I just came in and told them that I got an abortion from Roy Moore, and I had sex with him when I was underage, etc. And they just wrote it down. Except they didn't. They said, no, wait a minute, we need documentation, we need corroboration, we need further witnesses. And she tried to trick them by doing things like, oh, I guess I'm gonna have to take it to a rival paper, I can't trust you guys, right? They're like, okay.
Because their journalistic ethics were more important in that case than getting the scoop.
Right, and then they're like, look, if you want us to publish this stuff about Roy Moore, we have to make sure that it's true. So can you help us figure out how it's true? And then she would start to give answers that were totally inconsistent. They're like, wait a minute, not only are we not publishing it, we're gonna look into you because because remember, from what they know in the beginning and for most of this, this is a person trying to do damage to Roy Moore, who keeps asking over and over to the reporters, can you make sure he loses? The reporter's like, how would I know if he's gonna lose or not lose? That's not my job. My job is to make sure your story is true, and then if it is, print it. But then she gave such inconsistent answers to their barrage of fact-checking that they're like, wait a minute, I don't think she's even real. And then that's when they unwind the fact that her name is matched to the GoFundMe page and is a conservative hack and works. And then they go and find her walking into Project Veritas. These guys are real criminal masterminds. Right?
How are they not better at this by now?
The Washington Post confronts her. She's like, that is ridiculous. I don't work for Project Veritas. Walks into Project Veritas and deletes her GoFundMe page.
And then she says to them, I think they're on to me, after accidentally butt dialing the Washington Post.
That didn't actually happen. That part she didn't do, but it could have. Anyway, so thank you for proving our point that the mainstream media does not make things up. Even when handed on a silver platter, they don't make it up. Now, if you said that some of those guys have bias, not only is that believable, I would join you. Probably not in the way that you expect, but I think that a lot of the writers, the editors, certainly the publishers, the owners, etc., bring their own set of assumptions to stories, and they don't quite recognize that. That is why they will have a reflexive reaction against anyone who is, in my opinion, not part of the establishment. Whether it's a right winger or Tea Party group or whatever, or a left wing challenger to the establishment like Bernie Sanders. Reflexively, the Washington Post, in my opinion, will go, wait a minute, the Bernie Sanders stuff sounds unrealistic, and they'll put color into it in a way that I think they don't even realize they're doing. But does the Washington Post get in a room and go, all right, let's try to figure out a way to destroy Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump? Okay, John, you make up this story. Susie, you go pretend that these quotes are real. And you accuse some random person of molestation, right?
I'm booting up the fake Newsotron now.
Yeah. No, that's not how it works. They don't make up stuff like that. And thank you for proving that almost beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, if you were to make a subtle and an effective argument against the mainstream media, you would talk about the implicit biases.
Yeah.
But that's not what Project Veritas is in the business of doing. They're in the business of doing hatchet jobs. And they have been
100% deceptive hatchet jobs, because they're not just, you know, making someone look bad, they're deceptively editing material to try to make them look bad.
Yes, and now they've done this on several occasions. And the reason they keep doing it is because right-wing organizations fund them to lie. And then Republicans will take their work and use those lies in an effort to destroy organizations they don't agree with politically, whether it's Planned Parenthood. And again, in that case, 9 different state investigations, including Republicans, including in Texas, saying Planned Parenthood didn't do anything wrong,
it was actually the people who did the tapes that did something wrong. Yeah. Okay, and then Acorn deceptively edited complete lies about how they walked in a pimp outfit, which they shot at another time. But what happened? The Republicans then defunded Acorn, yeah, which served poor people. Good, they crushed poor people with their lies and deception. And they're still around and still rewarded, yeah, with grant after grant from Republican donors who think, I want to crush poor people. And I want to crush the media who are giving you facts. I don't want them to give you facts. I want my propaganda in their place. That's why Project Veritas exists, for anyone to give them a, if you see anyone giving Project Veritas a shred of credibility, know that they are purposeful liars.
And you know one of those liars and one of those donors? Back in 2015, Donald Trump's charitable organization gave Project Veritas $5,000. I don't know for sure that it was the same money that eventually funded Jamie Phillips, but Jamie Phillips worked for them to go and deliver literal fake news. Donald Trump funding fake news.
Yes, he's of course among the small donors, and of course he didn't do it. He did it himself. He did it out of a charity.
It was someone else's money, but
yeah, charity that he runs, that he money he got from other people. But finally, look, this is Project Veritas is not alone. Gateway Pundit, another organization that doesn't mind lying at all. This is not an even playing field. The left wing, you might disagree with their opinions, but they're not making stuff up. The right wing has no qualms. They have no morality. They don't care about lies and truth. So Gateway Pundit, a conservative site, spread around a false story about how a family friend in Alabama just told a Washington Post reporter named Beth that Beth offered her $1,000 to accuse Roy Moore. Now, come on. Even if you got that story, Gateway Pundit, and you're theoretically part of the media, you're like, wouldn't you go, really? The Washington Post is going around Alabama offering people $1,000 to lie about Roy Moore? Like, that doesn't raise any red flags for you? Wouldn't they be a little bit more subtle? Wouldn't they cover their tracks, even if you believe that conspiracy theory? Yeah. No, Gateway Pundit's like, oh, it's a great, wonderful lie. Spread it everywhere. Spread it anywhere. Because they're not in media. They're in propaganda. They don't mind lying. They don't. The whole purpose is to lie. Yeah. On November 14th, a pastor in Alabama, as John alluded to, got a voicemail from a man falsely claiming to be from the Washington Post, saying that he was seeking women to, quote, do willing to make damaging remarks about Moore. None of it is true. And then they will turn around and say, you should watch out for fake news. Okay, so you know where the fake news is coming from. And this is why I actually, super ironically, at the end here to conclude, get frustrated with the mainstream media like the Washington Post, because they know all this stuff. Then they'll turn around in political stories, they'll call things 50-50. That's their actual bias. They'll go, I don't want to be accused by the right wing of being liberal, so the tax cuts that Trump, for example, and the Republicans in Congress are offering, some say that they will raise taxes on everybody making under $75,000 in the year 2027, and some say they won't. No, that's not a some say and some, that's a fact, yeah, right? But there are in so many stories, some say that Saddam Hussein personally attacked us on 9/11, some say he didn't. No, he didn't, that's a fact. But the Washington Post will turn around and take these guys that they know to be proven liars who are actually trying to destroy the Washington Post itself and call things even half the time. I don't know. I can't tell. I don't know. I don't want to be called a liberal.
Cuomo had the Breitbart editor on again. Why are you pretending that this is a source for information?
Yeah, and CNN has all of these different contributors who they know have said one outrageously false thing after another. And then those guys will then accuse, ironically, CNN of Washington Post of being liberal, when the reality is oftentimes they cover for conservatives and in this uneven playing field by calling things even when they most certainly are not even. Okay, we've got to do a whole second hour. Now, speaking of preposterous lies, Donald Trump, there's two stories in the second hour, including the man of the year thing. He's such a weirdo, pathological liar. I mean, it's so weird. We're going to show you the quotes of him saying Time is awful and the worst, and Time is the best. Mm. Time magazine is great, right? Depending on whether they put him on the cover. We can all see your tweets. What the fuck, right? And this This lunatic is the president of the United States. All right, we'll do that when we come back.